Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, February 26th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and a half or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we kick off what promises to be a very busy week on Bang the Book Radio. Conference tournaments beginning this week. We will talk a ton about those here on today's show with my only guest, Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. That will come after I hit up your listener questions for the Monday mailbag segment. We're going to bring Kyle onto the show a little bit earlier today, so probably about 15 to 20 minutes worth of your mailbag questions, and then a lot of those relative to the conference tournaments and hedging and things of that sort. So it's probably best to have Kyle with me for that ride as well. Over at bangthebook.com, tons of stuff going on. I spent about 13 hours writing yesterday. Not all of those things are posted yet because I'm still waiting on some futures odds for the conference tournaments here, but I will preview every conference tournament over at bangthebook.com. Because it starts today, the Atlantic Sun has been posted without odds. The Big Ten conference tournament posted with odds. The rest of them, whenever we start to see some numbers that are available out there in the offshore marketplace, CG Technology did release some futures odds for the conference tournaments last week. Not only are those not current at the time of publish, they're also not accessible to most of our listeners out there. So I didn't want to put those up with those numbers. So I'm still waiting as patiently as I can for the offshores to actually put these out and take some positions on those. But when that happens, we'll be posting those conference tournament previews over at bangthebook.com. Not all of them begin here this week. Some teams still have a game left. Some have two. Some have three when it comes to the conference regular season. So as we wrap up the regular season, we'll get those conference tournament previews posted over there at the website. Also still working on my MLB season win totals. Posted the American League Central last night, all five of those. 10 teams are posted, AL East and the AL Central, over at bangthebook.com. I'm about halfway through the NL Central, so I'll be posting the AL West either tonight or early tomorrow, then the NL East shortly thereafter. Then as I finish those up, I'll get all of those posted. My hope would certainly be to have all 30 teams put up by probably the middle of next week at the absolute latest. Keep in mind, I'm still doing the conference tournament preview stuff as well. And then we've got, you know, we can't forget about golf and NASCAR and UFC and the NHL and the NBA. And there's so much going on, to be totally honest with you right now. This is a great 6 weeks of the sports calendar with conference tournaments, March Madness, the push for the NBA and the NHL playoffs. The trade deadline in the NHL is today. You've got opening day coming up here in, I don't know, what, about 4.5 weeks' time or something like that. So tons of stuff going on. Keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. And then obviously here on Bang the Book Radio, hoping, health permitting, of course, to get Kyle Hunter back on the show again for Wednesday's segment so we can talk some more conference tournaments there with him. We try to cover all of them. The last 2 years we've been very successful covering all the conference tournaments and giving you some good betting opportunities for those. And that's the hope that we have here for this year as well. All right. It has been a very busy day and a half here so far with all the writing I've got going on and then organizing your questions here for the Monday mailbag, getting everything set up for today's segment. So let's see how things go with today's show. But we'll go ahead and get into the Monday mailbag segment. And you can send me your questions for the Monday mailbag on Twitter, either at Skating Tripods, or you can email them to me, adam@bangthebook.com. We got an email address set up for me over there at the website now. So adam@bangthebook.com or at Skating Tripods on Twitter. It's a little bit challenging because some of these questions are asked to both Kyle and I since I posted about him yesterday when I was soliciting questions for this. So we'll see what I can get through here by myself, and then we'll also get some of his thoughts on some of these questions as well. First question here, though, this week for the Monday mailbag, this is one I got here this morning. This one comes from Shane Bowes on Twitter, asking about betting trends. It says, which betting trends should I take more seriously when betting on individual college basketball games or any sports for that matter? I will preface my answer by saying that I'm not a big fan betting trends. I've talked about this before. I'm a very big sample size guy. And there can be a lot of high variance if you're talking about a sample size of 8 or 9 games. You know, and furthermore, you really need a sample size for these types of things because you have teams that are in such different situations on a year-by-year basis. And you look at college basketball as an example. You know, UNC Wilmington, for example, has won the Colonial Athletic Association Conference Tournament each of the last 2 years. This year, the Seahawks go into the conference tournament with a 10-20 record. So do trends with the Seahawks matter from 2016 and 2017 when they're a team that's 10 games below 500 in 2018? I don't think so. So I don't really like a lot of trends when it comes to college basketball or college football for that matter, because there is so much turnover in both of those sports, and not just from a player personnel standpoint, but from a coaching standpoint as well. And obviously we see that very frequently nowadays, where group of five coaches getting power five jobs, group of five coordinators getting other group of five head coaching jobs, or possibly trading up to be a coordinator at group of five school. There's just too much turnover. There's too much volatility, I think, when you talk about college football and college basketball. Now, that being said, sure, there are some situations where betting trends can be relevant. We'll talk about a few of them here when it comes to conference tournaments and the shooting backdrops and the venues that these teams are playing in. But for me, if I'm looking at betting trends, I want something that has some serious sample size from the professional leagues and also from the college leagues. Now, you know, a lot of times you can run into situations in college games, and I'll use the Patriot League as an example here. You know, Bucknell and Lehigh are the top two teams in this conference as far as I'm concerned. They struggled when they played games immediately following playing each other this season. And I imagine that's been a several-year trend for both of those teams. So I think that there may be some validity to something like that, where if you've got a college basketball team or a college football team that has regularly been dominant in its respective conference, there is a letdown factor sometimes when they step up in competition and play some of those teams that are a little bit closer to their level. So I think in that respect, maybe some betting trends there have a little bit of value. You know, I think that when you look at current season betting trends for like NHL over-unders, for example, the Islanders have been a great over team throughout the season. They don't play good defense. They do not have good goaltending. And they've got a pretty offensively creative bunch. They've got a former NHL player in Doug Weight, who was a great assist man, a guy that certainly knows how to get a team up and down the ice, played in an era where offense was fairly comparable to what it's like now. That's a team that I would expect to keep going over the total. You know, the Florida Panthers are a team that's been having a lot of overs here recently as they've had some goaltending injuries. That's a situation where I think the trends, you know, could matter a little bit more. I think a lot of times, you know, when trends are context dependent, like when you've got teams that are dealing with a lot of injuries, you know, if the Wizards, for example, had gone on a really big under trend without John Wall, that would make sense. That's something that's probably not going to change. So I don't necessarily love head-to-head betting trends because the sample sizes aren't big enough. I don't give a shit what a team did on Tuesday nights. I don't care what a team is on Thursday nights against the spread. Something that doesn't really matter to me. Now, maybe you could make a case a college basketball team on a Thursday that played on a Saturday or Sunday, they're a better team with rest. Okay, that's fine. But I think that's just a natural scenario rather than a betting trend. So ultimately, I'm not a big guy with betting trends, so maybe I'm not the right person to ask. But you know, I think that you never want to take a betting trend for what it says on the surface. You want to look for context. You know, because let's say, you know, a team has gone, you know, 2-7 against the spread on the road over its last nine games. Well, who was out? Who was playing? You know, was Joel Embiid sitting out for two or three of those games because they were back-to-backs? Then what good is that trend? You know, if they're playing a standalone road game and Embiid's in the lineup, why does it matter what they did over their last nine games when he only played, you'll say, maybe six of them? So you have to apply context to all betting trends. Never take them on the surface. Always look a little bit deeper and then see if there are some angles you could try to pull out of that. But like I said, you know, for me, I'm not a big betting trends guy. You know, I prefer to handicap the game based on the current situations, the current makeups of the teams, things of that sort. But I will say there are some people out there, you know, Mark Lawrence is somebody that's had a lot of success with this. I know Kyle Hunter has used betting trends a fair amount in some of his plays. You know, there are people that do subscribe to them, do believe in them. And I certainly don't want to, you know, throw a cold water on what they do and what they've had success with. For me, it doesn't necessarily work. For you, maybe it does. We've got a plethora of betting trends over at bangandbook.com for you to check out. But like I said, the most important takeaway for me and the ones that matter the most are the ones that you can apply context to where, like I said, you know, they make sense and they are something that, you know, maybe is a little bit more sustainable. Good buddy Josh on Twitter at @JSpawny asking me, which of the heavy division favorites is most likely to lose the division? I'm not sure where he pulled these odds from, but You've got Cleveland at minus 500, Houston minus 240, Washington minus 225, Cubs minus 200, Dodgers minus 220. And look, the obvious answer here is the shortest price in the Chicago Cubs at minus 200. Now, I think the Cubs are a very good team. I just recently finished working on my season win total write-up about them, and I am pretty optimistic about their ability to win this division. But I'm also writing my Brewers one right now, and I really, really like the Brewers again this year. And then St. Louis, obviously a team that made some significant upgrades. They've got some young pitching ready to graduate to the major leagues. I think when you look at the current landscape in Major League Baseball, Cleveland will win the Central Division. It's just a matter of by how much. Houston will win the AL West. It's a matter of by how much. Washington will win the East. It's a matter of how much. And then the Dodgers, you know, I think the Dodgers, just because of their depth, are in such a great position to hold off a team like Arizona. Furthermore, for Arizona, I don't know what to expect with them with the humidor being installed at Chase Field. That is something I will talk about in my season win total write-up. They are not a team that I have any interest in taking any preseason positions on because I just don't know what that humidor does to them offensively. I know what it does to help them from a pitching standpoint, but you know, I don't know what it means overall for that ball club. So you know, the Dodgers look pretty safe to me. I don't think Colorado can challenge them. I don't think San Francisco is really there yet. I don't really love the depth of their rotation as much. So I would have to say the Cubs right now, and I would have to say the Cardinals, probably the most likely team to get to them. If everything goes right for the Brewers, if Jimmy Nelson comes back early and the offense is firing on all cylinders, they could make this thing very interesting. But I have to think, you know, and the price sort of dictates this as well, that the Cubs would be the most vulnerable team in terms of losing the division. But I do think that those five teams all win their respective divisions, and then we'll see what happens in the AL East, where whichever team doesn't win the division between Boston and New York, one of them is obviously going to be on the wild card and probably have home field advantage in that wild card game as well. A question from @Kez2109. I talked on last Monday's mailbag about how being organized is probably the most important tip I can give you in terms of if you want to take this thing seriously. Everybody can handicap a game, but it's bankroll management and it's organization that are two of the biggest keys here if you want to take this thing seriously. So @Kez2109 asks, talking organization, how do you and others keep their work organized and the layout of how they keep their books and Excel spreadsheets? For me, I'm actually somebody that doesn't use Excel a whole lot. I prefer to handwrite a lot of things, actually, in terms of tracking my information. Now, as far as finding information, I've got a ton of bookmarks. I've got, you know, I follow over 1,000 people on Twitter, so it's very hard for me to miss a lot of important information that's out there. But I'm really not an Excel guy. I know a lot of people obviously are, and Excel would probably make the process a lot easier for me. But one of the things that I found growing up is that, you know, I would retain information a lot easier if I wrote it down. So I've got multiple notebooks sitting here at my desk. I will write down a lot of things. Right now I'm looking at a page where I'm tracking the word counts for my season win totals and the conference tournament previews. But I do like to write a lot of stuff down because, like I said, I think it helps me retain the information a little bit more. And maybe that's just a byproduct of the fact that I'm typing things day after day after day with all the writing that I do that, you know, maybe sometimes it just sort of, I don't want to say in one ear, not the other, because that's not really the right expression, but still, I like to try to retain things as much as possible. I'm not a very visual person necessarily, but when I write things down, it does kind of stick. So like I said, I like to write a lot of stuff out. I go through a lot of pens. It's actually kind of a joke. My wife gets me pens every year for Christmas just because of the way that I go through them. And that's one of the things that works for me. And you know, like I said, a lot of people love to use spreadsheets. If you're a modeler, you almost have to. It can be very easy to track in spreadsheets as well. You know, sometimes I'll keep stuff in Notepad or a Word document, something like that. Maybe not the most organized, but you have to find what works for you. And what works for you may not be what works for somebody else. So, you know, I'm not necessarily sure how people set up, you know, their Excel spreadsheets and how they track everything. Maybe that's something I'll look to do here in future segments. It's kind of hard to do right now with so much going on in terms of the sports and the conference tournaments and all that. But it is a question that I will remember. It is something that I will ask about. But again, you know, you just want to make sure that you're tracking your information specifically from a bankroll standpoint. You know, calculate those wins and losses. And obviously, if you're betting offshore, the sportsbooks will do that on your account page for you. But it's never a bad thing to have an extra copy of that type of stuff and to just be able to look and see and know, you know, what areas you excel in, what areas that, no pun intended, of course, what areas that you could use a little bit more work in. So, you know, maybe I'm not the best person to ask that question to because I do it in a little bit of an unconventional way, you know, doing a lot of writing and stuff like that. But, you know, whatever works for you is the best thing that I could suggest. You know, if you're skilled at using Excel, use Excel. If you're not somebody that knows Excel very well, you know, use Microsoft Word. You can always make tables in Microsoft Word, and, you know, maybe it's a little bit tougher. You can't put in some of those equations that will do things for you in Excel, but at least you've got the information there in front of you, and you are tracking it, and that's an important thing. But, you know, like I said, I think one very important thing for organization is have some of those Twitter lists. You know, separate the beat writers and the team Twitter accounts by sport, by conference, whatever you want to do. This is an investment in your future. If you want to be serious with handicapping, do something like that. You know, take the time. Maybe do it during the summertime. You know, do it when baseball's going on. We don't have all these sports going on. Make it a point to put together a spreadsheet that works for you or Twitter beat writer lists that work for you. You know, different folders of bookmarks, stuff like that. Take some time to do these things. You know, it may feel like it's a little bit monotonous, a little bit unnecessary, but in the long run, you know, I think that it is something that will have a lot of positive value for you. So like I said, a lot of times here, these questions in the Monday mailbag this week, you know, have to do with college basketball and conference tournaments and all that type of stuff. So, you know, maybe I'll answer some of them here now, and then we can just use time on Kyle's answers for these. At TM underscore investments asked me this morning, do you factor in past tournament success when deciding what round to start hedging? For example, I have Virginia at 40-1. So would you start to hedge in round 32 or the round of 32 because of their past tournament history? I mean, I honestly can't answer that question for you right now because we have to see what the draw is for Virginia. You know, if they've got a team that maybe runs with some tempo that can sort of upset their pack line defense a little bit, if they've got a team that can shoot over the top very, very well, maybe that's a bad matchup for them. Maybe that's a situation where you do want to start thinking about a potential hedge. I think with a 40-1, you'd like to get to the Sweet 16 at a minimum before you start hedging. But to the original question, I don't factor in past tournament success. You know, it's going to be matchup dependent to me when I start hedging because Virginia is a different team this year. You know, they've always been very good offensively, but it seems like Tony Bennett's team is better offensively this year, has more options on offense. So, you know, when you get into a tournament format like this, then, you know, the fact that their offense is better, that they have more pieces and parts, I think they're set up better than they have been in years past. So, no, I wouldn't use past tournament success or failure as something to decide, you know, how I want to play a future, whether I want to hedge it or let it ride a little bit longer. You know, it's all going to be matchup dependent for me. I'm not worried about what happened last year in the tournament. You know, you'll see teams sometimes go on these Cinderella runs. It doesn't mean it'll happen again. You see teams that perennially underachieve as a top seed. Doesn't mean it's going to happen here this year. You have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. And like I said, I mean, the big thing for me is, you know, what is Virginia's draw? What sort of situation do they get into here? At MikeyDFS86 on Twitter, good listener of the show here, big fan of him, asking about an East Tennessee State future and says they would need to win the conference to get in, right? And, of course, absolutely, at this point, the Buccaneers do need to win the conference. They've actually lost 4 of their last 5 games. So, you know, can you take a small position on them? I think the number was probably about 1,000-1 out there. Of course, you can take a $5 position on that or even a dollar position on that, and it's not going to hurt your bankroll in any way, shape, or form. Now, when it comes to hedging, of course, you'd have the opportunity to hedge right away. If they make it to the conference championship game, then you could hedge that if you wanted to, guarantee yourself some profit. Right now, they're a team that doesn't look like they're going to be capable of winning a game in the tournament with how they're playing. So, you know, it's really a matter of, you know, what sort of price are you expecting them to have in that conference tournament championship game? And then at that point, you can decide if you want to hedge your full-on, you know, futures bet. And look, I mean, if you're putting five to win 5,000 or, you know, a dollar to win 1,000 on them at 1,000-1, you know, I mean, you can let it ride if you want to, or you can guarantee yourself some profit by hedging right away. You know, it's not a bad situation to be in, but also at the same time, it is a little bit unconventional of a hedge because you're playing it before the team even makes it into March Madness. Yes, you can do it. I don't know if it's a great, a great thing to do year after year. But again, if you're making a very minimal investment of $1 or $5, you know, even playing the other side in the conference championship game, putting $25 on it or something like that, you still guarantee a profit, you know, as small as it is. And, you know, if you are somebody that rolls with a low bankroll, it's not a bad idea, quite frankly, you know, because you're putting such a minimal investment out there at the outset of $1 or $5 or even $10, something like that. It's not like it takes a big investment to hedge some of that out. So if you want to do it, you can. But, you know, again, it's one of those things where it's a hard question to figure out, because East Tennessee State, with the way they're playing, may not even make it to the conference championship game in that league. So, you know, again, all of these factors are such important considerations, because you want to have this diversified futures portfolio. You want to have a lot of different opportunities out there at your disposal. East Tennessee State could be one of them. But again, you know, it's really a risk tolerance type of thing. You know, do you want to put a dollar out there to maybe make 20 or 25 bucks? Then go right ahead. You know, I mean, we talked about last year with Sports Cheetah taking the Lamar Jackson Heisman Trophy future. You know, it was free money because Lamar Jackson was going to win the Heisman Trophy. Is an East Tennessee State future for $1 or $5 going to present the opportunity to get some free money? Maybe. But again, how big of a dog is East Tennessee State in that first round game if they do wind up making it to the NCAA tournament? At that point, you may have $30 invested in East Tennessee State. You know, how much do you have to play in that first round game? If they're a, you know, $600 or $700 underdog with a team that's favored by a large amount that you got to lay minus 600 or minus 700, how can you hedge a $25 future at that point if you roll with a small bankroll? You probably can't. So, you know, you're looking at a really challenging hedging situation with a team that's going to be such a big dog in the first round. So I don't think an East Tennessee State future makes a lot of sense at this point, especially with how they're playing. If they were playing better, maybe you could make a stronger case for it. But, you know, they're not even in that great of a position to win their conference tournament, let alone be a competitive team in the first round. So to be fair, this question was asked on February 22nd. So, you know, they have certainly gone in the tank a little bit more since then, but still, you know, I think it's a really hard position to try and take right now. At Matt_D33 says, excited for the small conference tournament breakdown show, which we will have here today, and then also hoping to get Kyle on the show on Wednesday as well to talk about a few more of these. Says, in these conferences, do you see value on teams that underachieve that need to win out to get in? Examples this year would be UT Arlington in the Sun Belt or Missouri State in the Missouri Valley Conference. So I think it's a difficult thing to do right now with a team like UT Arlington. Talk about the Sun Belt a little bit here on these shows, and the Sun Belt is a conference that, you know, right now looks very top-heavy with Louisiana, and then Georgia State is a team that, you know, is pretty good, has had a little bit of tournament success. For UT Arlington, yes, they've underachieved, and the thing about that is when you've got a team that kind of stands out as a name brand type of team, like a UT Arlington here in the Sun Belt, because they've got a player like Kevin Hervey, a player that a lot of people know, you're going to be paying an inflation in the futures market anyway, to the point where this is a team that really hasn't played well this season, but I guarantee you that they're very close to Georgia State from a futures price. Should they be? Probably not. You know, because this is a team, as you look at the current breakdown of the Sun Belt, they might run into a team like Louisiana. You know, they may not get the opportunity to play that 2-3 game unless things change a little bit for them in terms of the conference standings. So they may run into Louisiana, you know, in the semifinals. And at that point, you know, why can't you just play UT Arlington on the money line in that game? Those are the big questions that you have to decide, and some of the questions that, you know, Kyle Hunter and I will attempt to answer here on these shows this week, is that sometimes it makes more sense to just go ahead and play the team, you know, as an underdog in a big game, or a money line rollover is another example. For UT Arlington here, because they've underachieved this season, they've put themselves into a tougher position once they get to the conference tournament. They're going to have to play a Georgia State or Louisiana, you know, instead of being the hunter. They're kind of, you know, a team that, or instead of being the hunted, I should say, they're a team that's going to have a little bit of an inflated perception in the futures market. They'll probably be, and again, I wish I had odds for all these conference tournaments. Five Dimes is down this morning. BetOnline only has the big conferences. But UT Arlington is going to be a team that's going to be behind Louisiana, but very close to Georgia State. Should they be? I don't know. But, you know, they're going to have this inflated perception. So I don't think that there's a ton of value, you know, in playing a situation like that, because you're already paying this inflated price. Similarly, I would think on a game-by-game basis, there's probably a little bit of an inflated price as well, because you're going to have a lot of people want to get involved with conference tournaments that maybe don't know these leagues all that well. And the odds makers know that. So UT Arlington games may be shaded a half a point, maybe a point and a half in some really extreme cases, because people know them. You know, people don't know the other teams in the Sun Belt for college basketball, but they know UT Arlington. So I don't really think that you're going to run into a spot where there's value on a team like that. Missouri State now, you know, they're one of the better teams in the Missouri Valley based on the KenPom ratings. So that may end up being a team that, you know, does have a little bit lower of a futures price than they should as well, especially in a league where, you know, you've got Loyola Chicago, who really stands out, could have a potential case for an at-large berth, but they are far and away the best team here in this conference. So Missouri State sitting there at 7-11 in conference play, you know, they may be better than the teams that are ahead of them. It's just a matter of their draw and how things set up. So unfortunately, these are easier questions for me to answer when we actually have, you know, some lines to talk about here. But unfortunately, those aren't up right now. So we'll have to talk in some more general terms about some of these conferences here on today's show. But, you know, once odds do come out, you can sort of weigh the risk reward. But I would think that, you know, while these teams may be the most talented in their respective leagues, you're going to be paying a premium for that anyway. So there's probably not a whole lot of value, you know, in something like a UT Arlington or a Missouri State, even though Missouri State, you know, goes into the Missouri Valley Conference tournament as such a significant, as a team with such a significant mountain to climb because of where they're seated here. You know, it still seems to me like as a number 7 seed, you know, they're probably going to have a higher price than some of the teams that are ahead of them, maybe like an Indiana State or a Bradley, probably maybe a higher price than Drake as well. Again, it's tough to speculate on these types of things because we don't have the odds out right now. But still, Missouri State. Now, keep in mind, too, here that Missouri State is a team that has to play an extra game by finishing 7th. The top 6 seeds in the Missouri Valley get byes to the quarterfinals. Missouri State has to play an extra game. Now, they should beat Valparaiso, but they got to play another game. So it's 4 games in 4 days for them, 3 games in 3 days to actually win that semifinal game. How much futures value could there possibly be in a team like that? It's tough to say. So again, once we've got odds, we can paint a little bit clearer of a picture of these types of things. But I don't think that you should blindly go in playing the UT Arlingtons or the Missouri States or the UNC Wilmingtons of the world, you know, just because they were teams that were supposed to do well and didn't, that you can get yourself in a lot of trouble in those types of situations. So you know, again, just something that you want to consider, something you want to focus in on there when it comes to your handicapping portfolio. Another question here, this one came across the wire this morning from @WhaleTendy on Twitter. Perhaps you can answer this on today's show or here. Texas, 300-1 future. When would you recommend hedging as they're less than 30% to make the tourney now or let it go since it was a long short in the first place? This is a challenging discussion to have because I've got a couple of these futures where I've got some teams that are, you know, kind of on the tournament bubble or look like they're not going to make it. And unfortunately, I think at this point, you just kind of have to accept them as losses. You know, because a team like Texas, for example, you know, they're maybe getting in. They could be a last 4 in. And I think at that point, you just kind of hope for them to get in. Because it's going to be very hard. Now, if they get to, say, the Big 12 championship game, then yeah, absolutely. I think you can make a play there. But if they get to the Big 12 championship game, as a team that's firmly on the bubble, as a team that's possibly a last 4 in for one of those play-in games, you know, if they get to the conference championship game, they're going to be in the tournament. So I don't think at that point you really need to worry about a hedge on a team like Texas. I know it's a 300-1 shot. You certainly don't want to let that go by the wayside. But I think that's the type of team where you need them to get into the field before you can do anything. And if they make a deep run in the Big 12, then they're going to get into the field. If they lose in the first round of the Big 12 conference tournament, they're probably not in, and I don't really know what your hedging margin is really at that point anyway. So I think you just hope and pray. I think you hope that Texas makes a deep run in the Big 12 tournament, gets into the field of 68, and then you could start doing something with that 300-1 future. So I got Kyle Hunter on the line here from huntersportspicks.com for our Handicapping the Hardwood segment. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going all right, man. Whole family here had a bug this past week, and I'm just getting over it. So kind of clearing the cobwebs a little bit and gearing up for what's a really busy time of the year here.
This is a very, very busy time of the year, and you know we try to do everything that we can to cover all of the conference tournaments. We're going to cover as many of them as we can here on today's show, time permitting. But I do have some Monday mailbag questions that we need to get to here because they were asked with you in mind. And the one I was just talking about where you probably heard the tail end of it as you were waiting on hold for a couple seconds there, got a listener at Whale Tendy who's got Texas at 300-1. Says, when would you recommend hedging as they're less than 30% to make the tournament now? Or let it ride since it was a long short in the first place. What do you think about, you know, these teams where you've got a good futures price? They're not a lock to make the NCAA tournament, though.
Yeah, I think you just have to hope they make the NCAA tournament, because when you take those really long shots, you know, it can get pretty tricky if you try to hedge anything before that. I would assume, you know, when you take a long shot like that, also you don't put a lot of money on it, so you're not risking a lot. You're not out a lot if they don't make it. Obviously, you have a lot of potential if they do make it. So I think you just have to hope Texas plays their way into the tournament, because it'd be really tricky to try to hedge out of it before they get to the tournament. Then you start taking, you know, a team in the Big 12 tournament against them each time. Then you really reduce the amount of profit that you would make if they do get into it. So to me, I think that's one of those situations where they have a good enough chance to get in that you just have to hope they get in.
And I know you and I both have a position on Providence where we're kind of in the same boat. And, you know, for Providence here, I mean, it looks like they're on fairly solid footing. But again, obviously, a lot of things can change. If they're one and done in the Big East Conference tournament, that would be a significant problem for them. I've also got a piece of Kansas State, who right now would be one of the last four getting a bye. So I'm certainly hoping that the Wildcats can do something here in the Big 12 tournament. But again, those are small investments, because I think both of those prices were 500-1. Providence might have been 1,000-1. I don't remember offhand, but you know, those are small investments because they're 500-1 shots. So if I'm out that money, so be it. But I'm certainly hoping that I, you know, get a chance to get both of those teams in.
Yeah, Providence was 1,000-1. So yeah, definitely, you know, smaller investments where you just want to hope that you have that big potential payout and then, get yourself in a good spot. You know, I have a few others of those as well. You know, Virginia Tech 500-1. You know, you just want the team to get into it and give yourself a chance. And you know, I think Texas is a team that could still play their way in. You know, Big 12, it's pretty wide open. You know, who knows what's going to happen in that Big 12 conference tournament. Texas is a good defensive team. They're weak on offense, but, you know, if you have a good defense and you get in one of those wide open conference tournaments, you never know what's going to happen. So I think, you know, you still have a decent situation where they could play themselves in.
Yeah. And again, that's the big thing. I mean, I don't think I would touch the 300-1 right now. And, you know, there's really no way to hedge it necessarily in the conference tournament either. Like I said, if they make the conference tournament championship game, they're going to be in the field of 68, no matter what happens in that game. You know, they won't get the automatic bid, but making a run in the Big 12 Conference Tournament is going to increase their resume a little bit. Maybe they're still on a play-in line, maybe they're not, but the fact remains, if they get into the tournament, that certainly makes it a lot easier for you at that point to hedge. So I would definitely just kind of sit and wait and hope that they can find a way to make it in there. All right, how about this question here from at SecretSpy73? It says, since the tourney is a little wide open, and maybe this is a question that we can save and talk about a little bit more here once we actually get to March Madness. But, you know, as a general rule, will we be looking to take more underdogs and first half or more underdogs and first half bets over the first 2 days? And I mean, like everything else, I think that these questions are really hard to answer because so many of them are draw dependent.
Yeah, they're draw and price dependent. So, I mean, we don't know exactly what kind of, you know, price there's going to be on each line, obviously. You know, do I think that I'll be looking at underdogs more than favorites? But yeah, probably. I think so. You know, the thing is probably my favorite bets to make as far as the NCAA tournament are going against those public darlings that are, you know, get driven up just because everybody's talking about that team. The price gets driven up. But you know, that happens every year. So let's see what happens this year. Let's see if there's less, you know, big favorites or You know, I don't know if the odds makers will have adjusted for the fact that there is obviously more parity. I mean, I don't think we'll see as many big favorites as we've seen in the past, just because there's more unknown. But I think that's probably a more of an NCAA tournament thing. You know, in conference tournament time, underdogs and favorites, I don't really have any strong lean as to which way I'll be looking. It just depends on the price.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I mean, everything is so price dependent here. And, you know, there are some interesting conference tournament angles to possibly consider with some of those big underdogs. And we'll talk about that a little bit once we start breaking down some of these specific leagues, so long as I remember to, because I got a lot of stuff rolling through my mind right now, to say the least. But here's a pretty interesting question here. I know that you're a little bit more involved and invested in betting trends than I am. It's not something that I generally like to do a whole lot with my handicapping, but it is something that you've had success with in the past. And I got this question last night, so I do want to ask you so that we get a little bit better of an answer from somebody that does utilize them. You know, asking which betting trends should I take more seriously when betting on individual college basketball games or any sports for that matter. So what sorts of trends are you looking for?
Well, first of all, I'd say I don't think, you know, trends are certainly not my favorite thing to use as far as betting. It's just something I like to incorporate. I would say that I like to use trends more than you do, but probably less than the average guy still. You know, some trends mean nothing. You know, I see a lot of handicappers use things like, you know, somebody is 14-1 in their last 15 Tuesday night games or something like that, and that means nothing to me. You know, I don't think it matters what day of the week it is. I know some people think that's really important. You know, I don't think that's the case. What I do think is important, I'll use another sport as an example first, because I think it's a great angle. You know, you look at like the NBA, Game 6, Game 7, it's a closeout game in the playoffs. The unders have done tremendous in that spot, and I think that makes a ton of sense. You know, you could go back and see, I think the last, you know, 85 closeout games, it's something, you know, like 55-30 or maybe even better than that on the under. The game, it tightens up. You know, even if you get two teams that are usually good on offense, they don't want to go home. So the game slows down a little bit. The defenses improve. It's a little bit harder to make those shots on offense. Those are the type of trends that mean the most to me, is ones that, you know, it really makes sense why that trend would be able to continue, because you could have a lot of trends here where, you know, maybe it makes very little sense that, you know, a certain team has beaten another team time after time, and you think that's just going to regress to the mean. I wouldn't read too much into that. But if you have one that you think, you know, you could quantify as to why that one would continue to make sense, and that's the type of trend that I would like. I think, you know, in conference tournaments and in the NCAA tournament, you know, certain trends can make some sense as far as totals, you know, whether that team has had more overs or unders when they've played in the NCAA tournament. I know that they have different players from one year to the next, but they still have the same coach. If they have the same coach, I think that type of trend can make some sense, because some coaches will change things a little bit. They'll slow the game down as they get into these more important games. They'll have more unders. You know, to me, trends are something to help you verify that you want to make a bet. They're not something that make me just want to make a bet on their own usually. So hopefully that answered the question somewhat.
Yeah, the expression that I was thinking about while you were talking there is confirmations of context, because, you know, as you mentioned,
right,
you know, when games go up in importance, you know, it's generally a lower number of possessions. Teams don't want to make mistakes. They're not going to try and turn the basketball over. You know, closeout games are significant, and the context of that game would dictate an under, and then the trend is confirmation of that context. So I think that's probably the way that I would, you know, try to word it there, is that, you know, when you have trends that make sense because of situations, I don't think it really matters if a team is, you know, 9-2 against the spread in their last 11 Thursday games, like you said. You know, that stuff doesn't mean anything to me. But if it's a confirmation of context in that, you know, a team is 9-2 against the spread when playing against an underdog that, you know, is 60% to the under, something like that, maybe there's some more to that. Maybe there's something that you can use as a different type of angle. But, you know, like I said, on the surface, I don't love betting trends, but as you start to, you know, parse through some of them and see which ones make more sense, maybe there is a little bit more to it than that. All right, here's a question we got here early this morning at TM underscore investments. I just answered this one a little bit before you came on, so I just want to get your take on it. And basically the question revolves around having a Virginia future at 40-1. And the question is, do you factor in past tournament success when deciding what round to start hedging?
Oh, this is a good question. I like this. Yeah, I mean, Virginia is a tough team for me because I am a little bit worried about them just because of their past tournament, lack of success in the tournament. I think they have a better offense than they've had in some of the past years, but I still think it's difficult to win in the NCAA tournament every single game in a, you know, 58-56 type of game. You know, also, we've talked about this before, that when you slow the game down that much and you have so many low-scoring games, you open yourself up to, you know, if the other team gets red hot, you know, even in just one half, there's less possessions. The game's going to be closer, so there's more randomness there. Virginia is a team that I'm not extremely high on as far as, you know, their chance of winning at all compared to some of the other top teams. So, yeah, I would say I would factor in past tournament success as far as when to hedge. I don't know exactly when would be the right time to hedge. We'd have to see the bracket, obviously. But, you know, Virginia is a team that should be able to get a decent ways into the NCAA tournament. So, you know, obviously I like your grab there. I think that they do have value, but I wouldn't want to just, you know, sit on Virginia and try to hope that they win it or anything. That would be one where I would be looking to hedge out. And I do think that past tournament success has to at least be considered in some. I'm curious, you know, if Adam had a take on that one also.
Yeah, I mean, I said not really because, you know, just with the amount of turnover in college basketball, but then what you were saying does make a lot of sense. I mean, this is an angle that we have talked about with Virginia in the past is that, you know, they have to maximize so many of their offensive possessions because there just aren't a lot of possessions to be had in their games. And if they're playing a team that's, you know, really efficient on offense or can shoot over the top of them, that is a problem. And when you look at the NCAA tournament, the teams that generally tend to have a lot of success are very athletic or at least, you know, very, very efficient on both ends of the floor. And for Virginia, they really haven't had that offensive efficiency and they're not a particularly athletic team. They're a well-coached team. They do that pack line defense very, very well. But, you know, yeah, I mean, they have had a lot of tournament problems and, you know, maybe what they do isn't a sustainable model, you know, for winning in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, yeah, maybe that is something where I kind of did misspeak a little bit. And I will be curious to see, you know, how they do this year, but I do think their offense is better than previous years. So maybe this year they have more of a chance, but I do think ultimately that you're correct.
You know, I think with some other teams it might matter less. I think with Virginia it probably matters more just because they play so much differently than everybody else. You know, this is a team that doesn't get to the free throw line. They're actually kind of jump shot dependent team, even though they are a really good defense. So if their jump shot's not falling, their offense is in quite a bit more trouble. This is not to say that I don't think Virginia can, you know, win an NCAA tournament playing this way. I certainly think they can. We've seen teams, you know, way worse than Virginia go through and win the NCAA tournament. And certainly Virginia could. It's just it's hard to trust them too much the way that, you know, we've seen it go in the past in the NCAA tournament. And it's certainly one that I would consider hedging a little bit before I would one of the other top teams.
Well, then let's throw out another example here. And this is a team that could have been had in this same 40-1 range earlier on this year. And that's Purdue. I mean, this is a Purdue team that made the Sweet 16 last year for the first time since 2010. And we know that they've had some pretty decent teams in that span. Now, they obviously haven't had, you know, a team that's been as powerful as this year's maybe. But is this a different situation here where Purdue, because of the way they play, you're not so much worried about their past tournament lack of success? Or, you know, is it so well documented and such a thing under Matt Painter that it does play into you know, hedging for you?
Yeah, I would still be worried about them winning it. I don't know if Matt Painter is as good as some of the other top coaches. I'm not saying he's a bad coach, but I think that Matt Painter is at a coaching disadvantage versus some of the other top coaches in the NCAA tournament. Once you get far enough along, there's going to be some really good coaches in that tournament. And also Purdue shoots 42.1% from three-point range, and that has really helped them get to where they are. you know, shooting as many threes as they do and shooting that percentage can be pretty difficult to do on a consistent basis. I think Purdue's a really good team, but again, I would be looking to hedge out of them quicker than I would a team that has a little bit more balance and also a coach who's proven he can win this time of the year.
All right, this is kind of an interesting question here, so bear with me. This one's from at Here to Make Money on Twitter. So I had a question about hedging from a college basketball tournament perspective. When you take a few different future bets and you try and hedge, do you try and make sure you win only against that bet or against all of your bets? For example, I currently have half a unit on Rhode Island, one unit on Xavier, one unit on North Carolina, one on St. Mary's, half a unit on Creighton, half a unit on Kansas State. So a total of 4.5 units. When I begin to hedge for any of my plays, should I look to make sure I get back 4.5 units, or should I only look to make a profit on my single plays?
Wow, this is an interesting one, because when you get a lot of bets like this, it certainly makes it you know, more confusing. You got to really stay with it. You know, obviously you want to turn a profit overall, but I don't think you can just try to start hedging your plays all at the same time. So I think you really have to kind of consider them individually and hope that you end up turning a profit overall once you've put them all together. Because, you know, in this case, as he stated, you know, you've got some bigger positions on certain ones, and obviously those mean a lot more. To me, it's one of those spots where you just have to look at individually, you know, where are they at in their matchup? Where does it look like that one would make sense to hedge out individually? And then hope that when you get back, you know, instead of having your 4.5 units, you have 5.5, 6 units, because you've done a good job hedging out of each of them individually. So, you know, I don't think that you can consider them all together as much as you just look at the individual situations.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for me, when I make, you know, I talked about one of the things that Sports Cheetah does, I think it's just really smart to have a bankroll for futures separate from the day-to-day betting bankroll. But that doesn't mean that, you know, a collection of futures is one investment. I still think every future is an individual investment. So I'm worried about turning a profit on each and every one of those. And ultimately, I should turn a profit overall then based on the number of positions that I've taken. So, you know, I wouldn't worry about the collective investment that you have. I would worry about my investment on this team is X. I need to make money on, you know, above and beyond X. My investment on this team is Y. I need to make money above and beyond Y. I would look at them all as individual investments as opposed to, like, you know, buying them as a group.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I think if you do something like that, then, you know, when you start looking at them overall, you're going to realize, you know, once you do individually go into these and try to make a profit on each, you're not going to make a profit on every single one. You know, something's going to go wrong on some of these. You're going to lose on some of them. So, you know, individually, you try to do the best you can to try to turn a profit there. Some of them are going to lose, but hopefully the ones that hit more than make up for that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. And I mean, this sort of goes back to that question about Texas. And, you know, look, if Texas doesn't make the tournament and that bet is a loss, it is what it is. You know, that's why you want to have a diversified portfolio so that, you know, maybe you've got Texas that doesn't get in, but maybe you've got North Carolina at 30-1. You've got Purdue at 25-1. You've got these other options that are out there to where you could certainly make up for the, you know, whatever amount of money you lost on a team like Texas. So, you know, I think that's something that's really important to consider, is that I think to me, each futures bet would be something individual. Now, that being said, and I don't want to confuse the hell out of everybody here, but if a lot of those teams are placed into the same region, then you could maybe make a region future to take a position on one of those teams that you don't have. And then that's sort of a way of, you know, hedging against, you know, all the teams that you do have. Like, let's say, you know, Xavier, North Carolina, St. Mary's, Creighton, Rhode Island all get put in the East. Well, you could take a region futures bet on somebody that's not one of those teams to win the East, and then you've got a built-in hedge on all of those positions.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, and I think that, you know, if they do get put a lot of them in the same bracket, it's beneficial to you, because like you just said there, it's easier to hedge out of it in that kind of situation. So you probably won't get that lucky, but if you do, then I think that creates a pretty good situation.
All right, one other mailbag question to look at here, and this will be the one that we transition into our conference tournament discussion, and I love talking conference tournaments. That's why we're going to try to get you on the show here again on Wednesday to do some more of this, because There are 32 conference tournaments in college basketball. I don't know if we'll get to all of them here just because of the timing of our segments and everything like that, but we're going to try to get to as many of them as we possibly can here. So this question from @Seaverd_3 on Twitter, what tournaments slash venues have undertrends in conference tournaments due to bigger backdrops and other distractions? And I know this is your bread and butter when it comes to conference tournaments.
Oh yeah, definitely. This is something I've looked at a lot year after year. There are several ones that I highlighted here in my notes. The Times Union Center, that's the MAAC. This is a really, really good under facility here in the past. I know that this is a bigger arena than most of them in the MAAC. I know that if you look at like the last 50 games played in the conference tournament there, it's something like 35-15 or 36-14 to the under. And, throughout the course of the year when they play games there, it's still been a pretty good under facility. I don't really know the facility well. I just know that the numbers point this one out as one that's a really good under bet. And so one of the things I would say is, you know, the thing that can happen too in this conference and the MAAC is you can get some really high posted totals because there are some teams that go very, very fast in this conference. And also there are a lot of pace wars. So you can get maybe 155, 160 total, even in the conference tournament sometimes. And, you know, as I'll point out here later, there are some good trends on really high numbers in conference tournaments being good under bets. So I think that, you know, that partially plays into this one. I think that the venue must be a good one as well for an under just based on sight lines or something like that. But that one's number one as far as if you just go back and look at, if you run through the data, what's the number one under facility as far as a conference tournament, it's been the Times Union Center.
Yeah, and the Pace Wars thing is a really interesting one too. I mean, a lot of people think about Iona being the team that's, you know, kind of run this conference the last few years. I think they've been in the conference tournament final. I actually have it in front of me here, and I'll bring this up as I'm talking. But, you know, that's a team that's always played at a breakneck type of pace. They've won this tournament each of the last 2 years. They've been in the final 5 straight years. And, you know, people just automatically assume, oh, you've got Iona, you've got this fast team, it's going to be an over type of conference. That's not really necessarily the case. And especially, you know, as you mentioned, you know, as we talk about games gaining importance and games, you know, being played a little bit tighter, sometimes that does help the teams like a Manhattan who doesn't play all that fast. St. Peter's has had some decent performances in this tournament, and they play painfully slow. You know, sometimes those teams that like to get up and down the floor and run, a little bit hesitant to do that because of what's at stake in these games, and the totals don't always account for that.
Yeah, definitely true. I think that this one is a lot because the numbers are so high. It's a lot because these teams play so many high-scoring games throughout the course of the regular season, and the MAAC, the oddsmakers have to put a high total out there. So the number gets put out at a high number, then they have a tougher arena to shoot in than normal, and the game means a lot more. A lot of things come together to make this a good under-conference tournament. And I will say, you know, the number on in the last 15 years with a total of 150 or higher at a neutral site is 55.3% unders in the last 15 years. So that's a pretty strong number, and a lot of the totals here in the MAAC conference tournament are going to be 150 or higher because there are a lot of games where these teams have scored a ton of points. They play really quick. So that certainly plays a role into this one. Some of the other ones that I would say, Scott Trade Center, that's the MVC, partially due to the type of teams that play in this conference. I mean, let's be honest, the Missouri Valley is a conference where defense rules, nobody plays very fast, to be honest with you. I mean, if you play even somewhat quick, you're really fast compared to the rest of the teams in the Missouri Valley Conference. And then also, the arena layout certainly has something to do with it. This is a really big arena, much bigger than they're used to playing in. I think that this one is pretty well attended compared to some of the others, but still, you know, they can't fill this place out either. It's a really big facility. So the Scott Trade Center has been a really good under one, and I think that will probably continue. I will say, This one's not under the radar anymore. You'll notice this year again, when these MVC numbers come out, they'll immediately get that down very fast. So if you like an under here, you want to take it early.
And then another one that you've got listed here is the Honda Center. And I think this is very important and something that's a very important distinction for our listeners to pay attention to here. The Honda Center is where the Big West Conference Tournament is. And this is a much larger venue than where these teams usually play. Also, this is an arena that's built for hockey. Anaheim obviously does not have a basketball team. So this was an arena that was built for hockey and other types of events like that. So the sight lines can be different. The lighting can be different as well. Some of these big venues can be a real challenge.
Oh, definitely. Especially when you have teams who are used to playing in a facility that, you know, seats 3,000 or 2,500 people. And then you go to a place like this, and that game means a lot more than your other games have meant. I think that creates kind of the perfect storm. So the Honda Center has been a really good one as well. Madison Square Garden is the best under arena there is in college basketball. You know, we're going to have a couple conference tournaments there this year. So everybody knows Madison Square Garden is a good under arena. So, again, those numbers will get that down. The Toyota Center in Houston was one of the best also. The SWAC used to play there, but now they've moved it to Del Mar Fieldhouse. So that kind of got rid of one more. And I would say that those have covered the biggest ones. You know, the Honda Center is more under the radar than those others. So I think you get more value in the Big West with unders than you will with the MVC or with the games at Madison Square Garden. And also the MAAC is still under the radar. So I think you might get a little bit more value there. Like I said, on the others, as far as MSG and also Scott Trade Center, I think if you want the under, you better be ready to hit it right away.
And we will talk about a few conference tournaments this year that are moving to new venues, and that's always an interesting type of thing to figure out. All right, so before we actually dig into some of these individual conference tournaments, I know you've got a few more general stats, like that one that you mentioned about unders in a neutral site, total 150 or higher, 55.3%, a great rate there. How about some against the spread numbers that you've seen here?
Yeah, against the spread, it's harder to find big edges here. You know, conference tournament ATS overall, 50.5% favorites, 49.5% dog covers in the last 15 years. I tried to break it down to see what the first half looked like. The first half is exactly 50-50. It's almost exactly the same number. 50% favorites, 50% underdogs the last 15 years. I actually kind of figured that underdogs would have done better in the first half than that. I guess they've technically done better in the first half than they have in full games, but, you know, exactly 50-50. Now, the one where it's been profitable more consistently has been 6.5-point or larger underdogs in the first round of conference tournaments. So this is the first game of the conference tournament. You're 6.5-point dog or larger, 55.5% ATS since 2010. And you combine this as a winner, 55.5% ATS, it goes up to 60.6% ATS when that team has covered less than 50% of their games for the year. So basically what you're saying is this team has not covered very many games throughout the course of the season, so the odds makers are probably low on that. They get into this first round of the conference tournament, and they're 6.5-point underdog or larger. In that first round, when they have covered less than 50% ATS, they're 63-41, which is 60.6% ATS in the last 104 games. So you'll get a decent amount of those situations here early in conference tournaments. Actually, as you go later in the conference tournament, it swings over to where the favorites have had more value. I think that probably makes sense because everybody's trying hard here in the first round of conference tournament. So even those bigger underdogs, you know, this is their one shot. We talked about how at the end of the regular season, some teams are kind of giving up and just waiting for this. You're probably going to get at least effort from most teams here in the first round of the conference tournament.
Yeah, and I think another thing, too, is that, you know, especially with the way that a lot of these conference tournaments are structured, the top six seeds will have a bye to the quarters or the top four seeds or something like that. And the bottoms of these divisions, there's really not a ton of separation between those teams. But if you do have a team, if you've got a 7-versus-10 game and that 10 team has been terrible against the spread all year long, of course the books are going to think that they're going to be terrible again. But they are playing for, you know, their season lives. Maybe they're playing for the seniors or a coach that's leaving or something like that. But they are more motivated than they traditionally are, and the team that they're playing is not that much better than them. So I think that that's a trend that does make a whole lot of sense here. And again, that's one of those that is a context-dependent trend where you've got, you know, teams that are in win-or-go-home mode. You know, things change a little bit. And furthermore, one other point I'll make is that in the first round of the conference tournament, if you're up big in the second half and you're moving on to play a one seed or a two seed or something like that in the next game, you're either going to look ahead a little bit or keep some things in reserve because you have to play a back-to-back against a rested team. So the back door should be very wide open for some of those big dogs, you know, as long as they don't quit over the course of the game.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sitting here nodding as you said that. That's definitely a really good point that, you know, you get way ahead in these games. You know that you have to play again right away. You're going to play a team that's likely better the next day. Why wouldn't you take those top guys out early? Why wouldn't you, you know, make things a little bit more vanilla? You know, I wouldn't say you just completely shut it down, but you certainly give less effort. You put less into it than what the other team probably is because their season's about to be over. So that's that certainly leaves the back door open.
All right, so we're talking about some interesting ATS angles. Let's talk about some interesting totals angles here as we look ahead to conference tournaments.
All right, so overall conference tournament the last 15 years on all totals, 51.9% under, 48.1% over. If you look at only neutral courts, 52.2% unders, which is kind of an interesting number there, 52.2%. And then, like I said, the conference tournament unders on neutral play with 150 or higher, 55.3% in the last 15 years. The final one would be first half unders at neutral sites. This is one that I like to play quite a bit. I like to play first half unders at neutral sites, especially when it's a new venue or it's a proven venue that's poor for shooting backdrops. It takes a while to get used to those kind of shooting backdrops. And also, obviously, you don't get the foul fest at the end of the first half. When the first half total is 70 or higher and you're playing at a neutral site, the under is 128.99.3 since 2012. That's 56.4% under. I think this one makes a lot of sense. Like I said, unfamiliar backdrops, a lot higher stakes than a normal game. I think the first half under has more value than full game under in conference tournaments in general.
All right, let's look at some of these specific conference tournaments here. We'll try to run through as many as we possibly can on today's show. Hopefully get the rest of them that start here this week on Wednesday's show. Some teams still playing regular season games this week. If we've got time at the end of the show, we'll talk about a few of those. It's just very, very hard right now to cram all this college basketball stuff into just a couple of segments, but we'll do the best we can here. And in fact, conference tournaments actually start tonight with the Atlantic Sun Conference tournament. This is a conference that is not normally lined. We do see some lines here for tonight's games. A good buddy of mine, Mark Keller, lives out in Vegas, did tell me as I was looking for some A-Sun futures to talk about here on today's show that Florida Gulf Coast was minus 300 out there in Las Vegas. So they are a significant favorite to take down this conference tournament.
Yeah, wow. I wouldn't have thought they'd be quite that expensive, but it makes sense that they're a big favorite. Florida Gulf Coast is the one team here that has balance. You know, as you talked about even earlier, when it comes to the NCAA tournament, it's important to have a good offense and a good defense. Let's be honest, in the Atlantic Sun, almost nobody plays any defense. Florida Gulf Coast is kind of the exception to that, and that's why they're so much better than everybody else here. I really don't think that, you know, when you look at the A-Sun, there's not many teams that could win this conference tournament. You know, to me, it's Lipscomb is the only team with a legitimate chance to win this other than Florida Gulf Coast. So I'd be curious what their price is. That's the only way that I could look to invest anything here would be to take Lipscomb. Lipscomb has a really good coach in Casey Alexander. I think he's a guy that came from Belmont under Rick Byrd. Rick Byrd's a really good coach. I think that Lipscomb is a well-coached team. They've played Florida Gulf Coast really tough. I think they're the only team that really has a chance to take them down.
Yeah, and basically what this number boils down to is I would say that you're pretty much looking at whenever we get some futures prices that are out there, and as far as I'm looking, Five Dimes is still down here, but they didn't have anything up this morning anyway. What you're basically looking at here, I think, is with Florida Gulf Coast and Lipscomb, the futures price that you have for this tournament is the money line price for the conference championship game because both of those teams – should make it. Now, last year, Florida Gulf Coast was minus 295, I think, and Lipscomb was plus 245 from a conference tournament standpoint. I don't know what the line was in the conference championship game. But I will say this, Lipscomb did lead at the half in both games against Florida Gulf Coast this year. So at the very least, the Bisons can play with them, but there's really no point in grabbing any kind of future for this game because, or for this tournament, because if you want Lipscomb, you just play them on the money line in the conference championship game, and that's pretty much it right there.
Agreed. I think this is one of them that's pretty easy to move pretty quickly past, because if you like Lipscomb, like you said, you might as well just wait.
All right, so let's move on then to the Big South Conference Tournament. This one begins on February 27th, so it starts tonight. This is a very interesting format for this tournament because the first round games played at the campus site of the higher-seeded team, top six of the 10 teams here in this league, get byes to the quarterfinals. UNC Asheville, by virtue of winning the regular season, hosts the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and if they make the championship game, would be at home. If they don't, the championship game is at the venue of the higher seeded team. So this conference tournament for the quarters and semis is at Asheville's campus, no matter what. For the championship game, whoever the higher seed is, they will have home court advantage here in this one. So Asheville's your one seed, 20-11 overall, 13-5 in conference. Radford and Winthrop tied with 12-6, but Radford, the RPI tiebreaker, is the two seed. Winthrop, the three, the Campbell Fighting Camels are fourth. Liberty fifth, and then on down from there. So we don't have odds, unfortunately, for this one, but break the Big South down for us a little bit.
I have to chuckle every time you say fighting camels. I love that one. This is one where, first of all, it's a little bit confusing how that works with all the, you know, where the game's going to be played. This one starts here Tuesday night. And, to me, I was trying to look at a team that I like that's not the favorite here. I think Campbell's a tough matchup for Liberty, or else I would have liked Liberty, but I think Liberty has a tough first-round matchup. To me, you know, this is one of those conference tournaments to where, Radford could have some value because they play, like, a trapping-style defense. They force a lot of turnovers. They're a little bit less dependent on the jump shot because they get a lot of offensive rebounds than the average team. They're also 47th in minutes continuity. So I would see Radford as a team that could be having some value in this conference tournament, especially because they finished the season playing well. I like teams who aren't the favorite in the conference tournament who finished the season playing well. Obviously, this is a conference tournament that I – don't know as much about as some of the others because I haven't followed these teams as closely because they're not lined. But I don't think anybody's that much better than anybody else in the Big South this year. I think it's pretty wide open. I know Asheville is going to be the home team here, and they'll be the favorite, but I don't think they'll be a significant favorite. So I think there will be some opportunities to look for value here in the middle of this conference.
I think so, too. I mean, if Liberty was playing this game at a neutral site, I would probably like them a little bit more. But Asheville's a team that had won up until they got beaten by, I think it was Radford. They had won 21 straight at home earlier on this year. So this is a team that does have a very good home court advantage. They will have that home court advantage throughout if they make it to the conference championship game, which they should. But that Campbell-Liberty game is a challenging one there for them in the semifinals, whoever they wind up playing in that game. So because Asheville's at home, my inclination is sort of to look at the other side of the bracket and then make my decision between Radford and Winthrop. And I think both of those teams are kind of interchangeable. And I mean, their schedules and their RPIs are very close to each other as well. So maybe you go that route, but you have to keep in mind, whatever you do with this conference tournament future, Asheville will be the home team if they make it to the conference championship game, which makes it really hard to hedge another team because with their home court dominance, probably being worth three, maybe 3.5, in a league like this, it's hard to hedge against, you know, such a big money line favorite there.
Yeah, definitely. And the one game that Asheville did lose at home was against Liberty in overtime. Liberty blanked them 13-0 in overtime. I actually read an article about this talking about the UNC Asheville and how embarrassed they were by that performance. So it would certainly be Interesting if Asheville got to play Liberty again in that next game. I think they'd be highly motivated in that game. So that'd be something to keep an eye on. I think Radford's probably my favorite here. I think they'd have a pretty good matchup there against either probably High Point because Longwood's been so bad. But I think Radford has a pretty good matchup there. And I think their style of trapping and forcing a lot of turnovers can be difficult even for a team like Winthrop. And Winthrop is not as experienced as they've been in some of the past years. So I don't think they're quite the team that they've been in the last couple seasons.
And obviously what's so difficult about a conference like this is it's not generally lined, much like the Atlantic Sun. So we don't really have a barometer on these teams. We don't really have too many lines that we can compare to. That's a little bit different here in the Patriot League, which is the one that we'll move to next, as this conference tournament starts February 27th. All games in this tournament are played on campus sites. Number one seed Bucknell would be at home through the conference championship game, but all of the games leading up to that point played at the higher seeded campus site. So that's why we've got a Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday format with this conference tournament. Bucknell is going to be an overwhelming favorite when this number comes out. They won the conference by four games. Colgate was second at 12-6. Everybody else kind of interchangeable beyond them. But I'll say this, something that's very interesting about this conference tournament is that the likely matchup there on Sunday, March 4th in the semifinals between Bucknell and Lehigh could very well determine who wins this conference.
It certainly could. You know, Bucknell is the team in this conference that's been the best on offense and defense. You know, we've talked about that already in multiple conferences. A lot of these conferences that aren't very big, you have a lot of teams that are good on offense, a lot of teams that are good on defense, but not many that are good at both. Bucknell's really the only team that's good at both here in this conference. Again, that's why they're the best team in this league, and they're certainly the big favorite here. They are very experienced. They got to the NCAA tournament last year. They played pretty well. They only lost by 6 points against West Virginia last year. So this is a team that's really hungry to get back. They're certainly going to be a big favorite again. I think it's also interesting to point out how Colgate played against Bucknell in the two games this year. I remember I watched the end of the Bucknell and Colgate game where Bucknell was at home against Colgate. This was several weeks ago on Monday, February 12th. I didn't watch the majority of the game, and in general I wouldn't watch Bucknell versus Colgate very often, but right at the end of the game, Bucknell was losing 61-51 with 55 seconds left and came back and won. And that's a pretty epic comeback right there. And I remember that game well because I was watching that game as my wife was sitting there in the room and my son as well. And I was trying to explain to them how big of a deal this was, but that it was a massive comeback. And my wife kind of just said, it's Bucknell versus Colgate. Why are we so excited about this? But, this is one of the spots where Colgate has proven they can play with Bucknell, but can they get over the top? You know, their defense isn't very good. Like you said, Lehigh's been playing well here lately. I think that'd be an interesting semifinal matchup. I don't know where the value is going to be in this one. I think that, Bucknell is going to be a really big favorite. So I couldn't lay it with them, but somewhere in the middle there.
I think what's really hard is, again, you're going to have this situation where it's hard to hedge any kind of future because Bucknell is going to be such a big favorite, irrespective of who they play in that championship game on March 7th. There is one angle I want to point out here, and it's that Bucknell, after the two games against Lehigh, really, really struggle in the next game. I think they feel like even though Colgate is the number two seed, is a team that played them very tough here, I think they feel like Lehigh is their primary competition. Ironically enough, both of those games that Colgate played against Bucknell came immediately after playing Lehigh, which is probably the situation we'd see here for the championship game on March 7th. And Colgate did hang around in both of those games, as you mentioned. You know, probably should have won that one where they were up by 10 with under a minute left. So in that respect, maybe Colgate is a value play. But again, the problem is you take the Colgate future, you can't really hedge it because they're going to be a significant dog to Bucknell. Unless you live bet the game, find some kind of spot to maybe take the Bison live, it's very, very hard to do something like that. And that's the problem with some of these small leagues is that there just generally isn't a whole lot of value because one team is so much better. And once we get to that championship game, you're going to have a really big number to go up against. Let's go to a conference where, you know, we do have a little bit more intrigue. And again, unfortunately, we don't have lines for these today, which is very frustrating. But we'll go to the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament. And this is one of those that I mentioned that has a new venue. Since 2002, this tournament's been in Nashville, been at the Nashville Municipal Auditorium for a while. This year, it moves to a neutral site, the Ford Center in Evansville, Indiana.
I'm surprised they moved this conference tournament. I really am. There's a lot of teams in Tennessee there. I know this one was pretty well attended in Nashville. They're playing now at the Ford Center where the Evansville Purple Aces play. I looked this one up to see what kind of venue it's been. The under 75 and 74 in the last 149 games there, so nothing there. It is new to these teams, though. I wouldn't think the attendance would be very good here. I would still lean to the under here, especially in first halves, because it's a new venue. To me, Murray State's the best team in this league. I certainly think they're the most likely winner. They haven't had much success here in the OVC tournament in the past. I think that they will probably win this conference tournament this year. You know, obviously the top two teams get a really good draw here in the OVC because they get a bye all the way to the semifinals. So it's kind of hard to go against teams, but I think you have to look toward one of the teams that at least gets a bye to the quarterfinals. I think it'd be pretty hard for one of the teams that's having to play in the first round on February 28th to make a run all the way. My favorite value play would be Jacksonville State. Jacksonville State has proven that they can beat the best teams in this league. They beat Belmont twice. Jacksonville State is one of those teams that's really well coached as well. Ray Harper has been a good coach everywhere he's gone. They play really good defense. They're number one in the conference in defensive efficiency. So I'd like to see a number. Like you said, it's kind of frustrating that there's no numbers here. It's certainly more fun to talk about these when we have numbers. But I would say that Murray State is the most likely to win this, and I think Jacksonville State is a good value candidate. Belmont, to me, is a quality team again this year, but Belmont's really played poorly with having a double bye. And I know Rick Byrd has said that he's going to try to do things differently this year because of how poorly they've played in the past, but it's kind of hard to overlook that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the double bye isn't a great thing. I mean, you know, you want to get out there and play, and these other teams have a game or two to work out the kinks and get comfortable with the nerves and all that. And then all of a sudden, you got to hit the ground running with that double bye. And as you mentioned, Belmont, the last 2 years, they've lost in that first game with the double bye. Jacksonville State would be the team that I'd be looking at as well. I mean, they did win this conference last year. And if I really wanted to look at a very, very deep sleeper type of team in this conference, I'd look at Tennessee State. You know, Tennessee State is a team that has played some pretty good defense. I'm guessing, and this is clearly a guess because we don't have futures out for this yet, I'm guessing Tennessee State's probably somewhere in the 2,500 type of range, maybe a little bit bigger than that because you're going to have Murray State and Belmont, such overwhelming favorites here. And if Tennessee State can get past Eastern Illinois, I think they can beat Austin Peay. Then they'd get Belmont in that semifinal game where Belmont has had some problems. The Tigers are a pretty decent defensive team. They'd be the long shot that I'd look at. Now, of course, if they ran into Murray State in the conference tournament or conference championship game, well, not a great hedging opportunity there because they'd be a double-digit dog in that one. But if I'm getting 25-1 or maybe something higher than that, Tennessee State may be a team I take a small position on.
I want to like Tennessee State because I like Dana Ford. I think he's a really good coach. Their offense has been so bad, the 303rd in offensive efficiency, and also they turn it over so often that I worry about them. You're definitely right. They play very good defense, and if their price is that high, then I think that they could have some value. You know, to me, Tennessee State would have a hard time going through the whole thing, so you definitely want to, you know, hedge out of them. It's just a question of when you hedge out. I think Jacksonville State, though they won't have near as long of a price, is a team that could certainly win the conference tournament. So the OVC, I think, will be an interesting tournament here, especially since it's in a new venue.
Well, that's the thing that I was thinking about. I mean, yeah, Tennessee State's not a good offensive team, but with the new venue, maybe that's not as much of a problem. If other teams are struggling with this shooting backdrop, and of course, because they're so far, you know, down the list here, because they have to play one of those early games, you know, they get a chance to get accustomed to the shooting backdrop. They've got to play on Wednesday. You know, the bottom four seeds do. This conference only took 8 of the 12 teams. So they'd have a chance to play that game. You know, does the new shooting backdrop, does the new atmosphere affect Austin Peay negatively? Well, maybe Tennessee State, you know, they've already been through it. Belmont, we know that they have problems with that double bye. So that was kind of my thought process there, in that because this is a new venue, because we're not exactly sure what to expect, maybe the fact that they're pretty good on defense but atrocious on offense, you know, doesn't hurt them as much, you know, because we've got this new venue. And furthermore, Belmont has to travel for this thing for the first time since 2002. You know, they're in Nashville, and now they're not playing in Nashville for this conference tournament. Maybe that does throw them off a little bit. Maybe it keeps them more engaged. Maybe that is a benefit to them because they're not just, you know, chilling around on campus or whatever else. They're actually out traveling, being with the team. Maybe that gets Belmont over the hump. I don't know, but, you know, new venues throw in a lot of different wrinkles.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is maybe that actually helps Belmont. Maybe there's a little bit less pressure on them. Maybe they play a little bit more free. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think Jacksonville State, if they're at the right price, could be a good value.
All right, so here's a league that's not usually lined, so we won't spend too much time on this one, but it is the Patriot League. This conference tournament begins on Wednesday. Wanted to make sure we got this one in today because, you know, we hope to be back on the air again on Wednesday, but tough to get everyone listening to this by that time. Wagner is clearly the number one seed here. St. Francis, Pennsylvania, Mount St. Mary's both went 12-6. But St. Francis grabbing the tiebreaker there. Long Island University, Brooklyn, the Blackbirds have played pretty well in this conference tournament. They're a four seed. Again, this one's not lined. The number one seed has made it to the final each of the last 4 years, but has only won it once. And that was last year with Mount St. Mary's. So any thoughts on this league?
This is not one that I have very much interest in. I would say that because nobody gets a bye anywhere here, it could be a good spot to try to find some value to go against a team like Wagner. Wagner's certainly been the best team. Brooklyn is an interesting team to me because they play at that really quick tempo. Derek Kellogg's the coach there. He used to be at Massachusetts. They're going to want to run and gun, try to outscore people in a really high-scoring game. They have no height. That hurts them quite a bit. To me, you know, I don't have much here. This would be an easy one for me to go through pretty quickly. And with the reseeding, it's a little bit tricky to try to decide where there's going to be value. So, you know, I don't know what to make of this one. I think that Wagner's the best team in this tournament, but there are a couple other teams. You know, St. Francis, Pennsylvania has been pretty good on defense throughout the course of the season. I certainly always like good defenses. And at least in the conference, St. Francis, Pennsylvania has been good on defense. So, to me, this is one of those spots where you like to try to find a team that's pretty decent at both offense and defense, at least in the league, and hopefully they take care of the ball well as well. But, you know, this is one of the conferences I know the least about.
Yeah, and I mean, this one's not lined, so you really don't have reason to spend too much time on it. And then the reseeding angle is a big-time challenge. I mean, that makes it hard because you don't know who's playing who in the semifinals there. And the only other one I know of for sure that reseeds is the Big West. I'm sure there's another one. It's out there, but you know that makes the Big West a challenging handicap as well. One last point I'll make about the Northeast Conference before we move on from it. A lot of people are going to look at Mount St. Mary's and say, well, don't they play a really hard non-conference schedule? Traditionally, they do, but this year they really didn't, because last year they took a significant amount of flack. From November 11th to December 3rd last year, they played nothing but road games, and they played a miserable, grueling, awful schedule. And they took some heat for it. So this year they did scale it back quite a bit. So they're not as battle-tested against, you know, some of those premier programs as they generally would be. All right, we got one conference that we do have lines for, and then we'll hit up the rest of them here on our Wednesday segment, hopefully. Unfortunately, I hate having to, you know, leave some of those behind. But the Big Ten Conference Tournament begins here February 28th. It is at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Last year it was in D.C., most of the years before that, it was in either Chicago or Indianapolis. And we actually have lines for this one, which is fantastic. So we're not just speculating here. Michigan State, the number one seed, the favorite at plus 250. Ohio State is the two seed, but they are plus 600. Purdue, plus 275 is the third seed. Nebraska is the four seed. They're plus 1,000. Michigan is the five seed. They're plus 700. Penn State also plus 1,000. Indiana, who's the six seed, plus 2,000. So some interesting values here in the Big Ten.
Yeah, this is interesting because, you know, the Big Ten is obviously a conference that I know well, you know well, and it's nice that we have odds, certainly. You know, Purdue playing worse recently, I feel like probably has them undervalued in general. I know this one was plus 400, now it's plus 275. You know, I think maybe a money line rollover would probably get a little bit better than plus 275. Purdue has more talent than Indiana and Ohio State. Obviously, I'm a Buckeyes fan, but I think Purdue would be in a pretty good spot playing Ohio State there in that game. They lost to them. They'd want to get revenge for that. Purdue has a lot higher upside than does Ohio State. If you're looking for a value play in this conference, I think you have to stay away from Michigan State. You know, Michigan State's side of the bracket is what I mean by that. You know, you don't want to go up against Michigan State quickly because Michigan State's playing really well right now. And, I mean, it's Tom Izzo. This is his time of the year for sure. If Michigan weren't going to play against them so quickly, I would like Michigan. I do think Michigan has a good chance of winning that first game in the second round and then also winning against Nebraska. And Michigan certainly has a chance against Michigan State. So I could make an argument for Michigan. If you like Michigan, you take the money line rollover here instead of taking the plus 700. I like Purdue to win this conference tournament a decent amount. I think that Purdue is a team that has the veteran experience that's nice in these types of conference tournaments. I think that also, you know, they have a good balance of offense and defense. Obviously, Michigan State does as well. You know, the fact that Purdue is only plus 275 and Michigan State plus 250, there's not as much value on Purdue as what I thought there might be. You know, this one's pretty good lines right now is what I would say, pretty tight. I would say that a Michigan money line rollover would make some sense as long as you're okay with going up against Michigan State. Ohio State's plus 600. I like the Buckeyes. I don't think the Buckeyes will win this conference tournament. I think they've certainly overachieved so far this year. You know, maybe they go and surprise me again, but I don't think they're quite as good as some of the other top teams in this conference. I think that it's also important to point out that obviously this one being in Madison Square Garden, what does that do to it? Well, you know, the shooting backdrop, and you don't want a team that relies really heavily on jump shooting and isn't very good on defense. But most of the top teams in this league are really good on defense. So, you know, it's interesting to see how much better Michigan is on defense than they've been in past years. To me, I think Purdue is the team that I like the most to win this conference tournament. I think Purdue could make a nice run here. Michigan State's hard to argue with as well.
What's so interesting about this league is that there are really only four teams that are definitely in the NCAA tournament. Nebraska right now is very solidly on the bubble. Now, right now, the most recent projections do have them out from Joe Lunardi. So if there's any team that's extremely motivated here in the Big Ten Conference tournament, it is Nebraska. And you brought up the money line rollover, and that's something I want to look at with Nebraska here in this situation, because Nebraska does get the double bye to the quarterfinals by being the number four seed, which means they don't have to worry about, you know, possibly slipping up in one of those early games. They'll probably get Michigan on Friday. They'll be a dog to Michigan in that game, even though it's a 4-5 with Nebraska as the four. They'll be an underdog in that game. They will clearly be an underdog to Michigan State. And if they make the conference championship game, they would be a dog to Purdue or Ohio State, you know, maybe be a slight favorite over Indiana, something like that. But they're a team that, you know, you'll get them at plus 1,000 out there in the marketplace right now. Their money line rollover is going to be much higher than that. I assume that they're probably a 4-5 point dog to Michigan, something like that. So just to make the math easy, we'll say they'd be about plus 200. So you start with a $100 investment, plus 200. That puts you up at 300. I think they're probably close to a double-digit dog against Michigan State, somewhere in the 10 type of range. So that's about a plus 400, plus 425. You put your 300 out there, you know, that's plus 475 then that you're looking at, or plus 425, so that's 1275. You're already above the plus 1,000 price that's out there. So the money line rollover can be a very, very beneficial thing for you in conference tournaments. Sometimes it's going to be much, much higher than the conference tournament futures odds that are out there. And Matt Lindemann, a good buddy of mine, actually tweeted about Purdue yesterday, said, you know, my money line rollover price is closer to plus 275. I don't know why they're plus 400. BetOnline adjusted the number. I know that Dave Mason follows him. I know that he's a respected member of that community. BetOnline came out and adjusted that number very, very quickly. Now, I don't know if they did it exclusively because of him, but that's an example of why calculating the money line rollover versus the futures price is very, very important.
Yeah, and I don't think the Nebraska price is even close to what you get on a money line rollover. I think Nebraska would be a 5 or 5.5 point underdog there against Michigan in that first game, probably 9.5 or 10 points. I think that's a really good case of where if you like Nebraska here because they have a lot to play for, plus 1,000 is not even close to the best you can get. I think Michigan will probably beat Nebraska in that game. So I don't really like Nebraska too much, but I couldn't blame you if you do like Nebraska based on how much they have to play for. If you do, take the money line rollover. And obviously it's easy to hedge a money line rollover as well. You just stop betting.
Exactly. That's the big thing. You don't have, if you take them at 10 to 1, you know, then you have to worry about hedging probably at two different spots. You can't really hedge too much against Michigan State since they'll be a minus 500, minus 550 favorite. And then, of course, they'd be a dog in the conference championship game as well. That's why you do the money line rollover. You don't have to hedge. Your hedge is to stop betting. So if you find some situations like that, please let us know on Twitter. You can let me know at Skating Tripods. You can let Kyle know at Kyle Hunter Picks. And Kyle, hopefully we can cram some more of these in here on Wednesday. I know you got to take off, but what's going on over at huntersportspicks.com right now?
Well, you know, it's a conference tournament time, then March Madness. Be sure to check out huntersportspicks.com for all my packages that are available right now. Also follow me there on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. I'll be posting some of the conference tournament futures that I like that didn't have lines here today on my Twitter account. So I'm looking forward to Wednesday. Hopefully we have a lot more odds to talk about then.
Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again, hopefully on Wednesday.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
Good stuff there with Kyle Hunter. And I know that we go over a lot of stuff. We do it in rapid fire fashion. I understand it's very difficult sometimes to follow along with these conference tournaments, but that is just, you know, the nature of the beast. I mean, there's so much that we want to try to get to here. So, you know, if there's something that wasn't very clear, you can always ask us on Twitter at Skating Tripods or at Kyle Hunter Picks, or just listen back through the segment, see if it registers a little bit differently that second time around. But, you know, we've got a lot of conferences that we're trying to get to here. Fortunately, a lot of them start Thursday and Friday. We did hit the ones that start today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. So at least we got through that on today's show. And I'll try to hit some more of these here with the other guests that we have. But I know that Kyle and I have a great rapport doing these segments. We love to do them. And it's such an important time of year for college basketball bettors. So hopefully we got to everything that we could here. And, of course, we'll try to do some more coming up here on our Wednesday segment. Coming up on Tuesday's edition of the show, we'll recap the NHL trade deadline and talk a little bit of hockey with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and also Vegas Hockey Hotline. Then we'll chat about Arch Madness, the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament in St. Louis, and also some NBA with Tony George of Doc Sports. Wednesday, Kyle Hunter and probably Wes Reynolds, although who knows, I may see if I can just have Kyle Hunter for the whole show there. We'll see how things break down with that. Thursday, Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels. Then Friday, we'll see what we have to bring you at that point. Could end up doing Rolf Michaels on Tuesday, extending the Brad Powers segment to Friday because we're going to be recording another one of those studio quality shows on Wednesday night with Brad. I'll let you know as we go throughout the week here. Lots of moving parts, lots of spinning plates. I'm doing a ton of writing. I'll have all these conference tournament previews up once we get some odds for them. So you can look out for that over at bangthebook.com. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.